Welcome back to the deep dive. So today we're gonna do something a little dangerous. We are gonna try and dismantle the way you think your own mind works.
A bold promise, yeah.
Yeah.
But the source material today,
yeah,
it really demands it. It's not every day we get to completely upend a fundamental belief about, you know, human biology.
It really is fundamental. Okay, let's start with a pretty safe assumption. If I asked you, or really anyone listening, to describe memory, what's the analogy everyone lands on? It's a computer, right?
Almost always.
Yeah.
We live in a digital world, so we reach for digital metaphors. The brain's the hard drive.
Exactly. You experience something, I don't know, a great dinner, a conversation. You hit save, and boom, it gets filed away in a little neuron folder.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you want to remember it, you just, you know, go into the folder, click the file, and open it up. And if you forget something, well, if the file's corrupted, or maybe you lost the path.
That's it, exactly. That's the model. It's mechanical, it feels intuitive. We think of memories as things stored inside a container, and that container is your skull.
Right. And today's deep dive is built around a classic text that says all of that is completely 100% wrong.
It is a radical departure, to say the least.
So we're looking at Henri Bergson's 1896 masterpiece, Matter and Memory. But, and this is really key, we're not just dusting off some old book. We're looking at it through the lens of a new article from SageMind called Pure versus Habit Memory, which just came out this week, February 8th, 2026.
And we've got some help from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy entries to navigate the heavier part.
And the reason SageMind is bringing this up now in 2026 is so important. I mean, we are living in this age of AI and just information overload. We're obsessed with the brain as a computer idea because we're literally building computers to act like brains.
And Bergson just offers a completely different architecture for how the mind works. It's a powerful counter narrative.
It really is. So here's the mission for this deep dive. We need to explain Bergson's really radical theory that the brain does not store memories, not a single one.
Which just sounds impossible on its face.
It sounds absurd. But to get our heads around it, we have to understand the difference between what he calls habit memory and pure memory.
And that's the difference between the body and, well, the spirit. If we can unpack this, it changes how you see everything from learning a new skill to just how you perceive time itself.
Okay, let's do it. Before we even get to memory, we have to talk about how Bergson sees the world itself. He starts with this concept of images. And he does not mean a JPEG on your screen.
No, and this is where people can get a little tripped up. You have to remember, Bergson is writing during this huge philosophical battle. On one side, you've got realism, the idea that objects exist out there, completely independent of us. A table is a table, whether you're looking at it or not.
Okay, simple enough. What's the other side?
The other side is idealism, the idea that objects only really exist in our minds. The table is just a bundle of perceptions that I'm having right now.
So is the table real, or is it just in my head?
Precisely. And Bergson comes along and says, stop fighting. Let's just call matter images. For him, an image is something more than a mental picture in your head, but maybe a little less than a totally separate thing. The whole universe is just this collection of images.
Okay, so the world is a soup of images. It's a very visual way to think about reality. But where do I fit in? Is my body an image too?
Your body is an image, yes. But Bergson calls it a privileged image.
Privileged how? Because it's mine.
Because it's a center of action. And this is the crucial pivot. Bergson says your body and your brain are not designed for knowledge. They aren't built to just sit there and record the world like a camera. They are designed for one thing, action.
So my perception isn't about seeing what's really there.
Perception is a filter. Think about it. The universe is throwing an infinite amount of data at you every second, every light wave, every vibration. If you perceived all of that, you'd be paralyzed. You couldn't function at all.
It would just be noise, total overload.
Exactly. So your body's job is to shut out 99% of reality. It only lets in what is useful to you.
It's asking, what can I do with this?
That's it, exactly. Perception is your body asking the world, can I eat this? Can I walk on this? Is this going to hurt me? If the answer is no, your brain just ignores it.
I love the analogy he uses for the brain here. He says the brain is absolutely not a warehouse.
Right. He calls it a central telephonic exchange.
A telephone exchange. Okay. For some of our listeners, we might need to explain that one.
Fair enough. Think of an old school switchboard operator. A call comes in, that's a sensation. The operator, your brain, plugs that signal into the correct output line. That's a movement, an action.
It connects the sensation to the motor response.
Yes. So you touch a hot stove, that's the incoming call. The brain routes it to the pull hand away muscle. That's the outgoing call.
But, and this is the key point, the switchboard doesn't make the call.
And it certainly doesn't store the conversation.
It just routes it.
It just routes it. Its whole job is to analyze the incoming signal and select the right physical reaction.
Yeah.
It adds nothing. It just connects, or maybe delays the response a bit.
Okay, so if the brain is just a switchboard for action, where is the memory? I mean, I definitely remember things. I remember where I parked my car this morning. If the switchboard isn't recording the calls, where is the recording?
And this brings us right to the core of that Sage Mind article, the huge difference between habit memory and pure memory.
And this is where it gets so fascinating, because we usually just lump these two things together. We say, I remember how to ride a bike, and I remember my 10th birthday party, and we just think it's the same kind of process.
But for Bergson, there are two radically different things. One belongs to the body, the other to the spirit.
Let's start with the body one, habit memory.
Okay, so imagine you're learning a poem by heart, or maybe a speech for work.
What do you do?
I read it over and over and over again. I repeat it, right? You struggle through it. The first time is hard. You stumble. The 10th time, it's easier. And eventually, you can just recite it without even looking. Now, Bergson asks, is that memory?
I would say yes, I remember the poem.
But Bergson says no. That is habit. It's a motor mechanism that you've literally inscribed into your body. It's no different than your legs knowing how to walk.
So when I'm reciting that poem, I'm not actually looking back into the past.
No, you're acting in the present. Yeah. You're just triggering a learned chain of muscular movements in your throat and mouth.
It's lived and acted rather than represented.
Exactly. It's automatic. It's utilitarian. It is stored in your nervous system as a tendency to move. It's totally physical.
So when I get in my car and drive to work without thinking about it, that's habit memory. I'm not remembering the route. My body is just executing a program.
That is a perfect example. Your body is just engaging with the images of the road and the steering wheel and reacting automatically. It's all about doing.
Okay, so that's the hard drive part, or maybe the software. It's a program. But what about the other kind? Pure memory.
Okay, stick with the poem example. Do you remember the specific moment you sat down to read that poem for, say, the third time?
Well, hypothetically, yeah. I can imagine it. The sun was coming through the window. I was drinking coffee. Maybe a car honked outside. I remember being frustrated that I couldn't get that one stanza right.
That is pure memory. It is a unique event in time. It has a date. It can't be repeated. You can recite the poem 1,000 times. That's habit.
Mm-hmm.
But you can never relive that specific moment of reading it for the third time.
So habit memory repeats.
And pure memory imagines. Yes. Pure memory records every single event of your life as it happens in its entirety. It's contemplative, it's spiritual, and crucially, it is not stored in the body.
Hang on, wait. It records every event.
That is Bergson's claim. The past survives automatically.
That is wild. So, okay, if I have this perfect record of everything I've ever done, my pure memory, why can't I remember what I had for breakfast 3 weeks ago? Why do I forget things?
Because it's not useful. Remember, the brain is a filter for action. It actively suppresses those memories because they don't help you survive right now.
So forgetting isn't a bug in the system, it's a feature.
It is a core survival mechanism. If you remembered every single breakfast you ever ate, every time you tied your shoes, you'd be completely overwhelmed. You couldn't act. The brain's main job is to keep the ghosts of the past at bay so you can focus.
Okay, this has to be where that famous diagram comes in. The cone.
The inverted cone.
Yes.
Yes. This is the visual metaphor that kind of ties it all together.
Let me try and paint a picture here for everyone listening, because this can get a little heady without the diagram. So imagine a cone.
Okay.
And the sharp point, the tip, is facing down.
Yeah.
And it's just touching a flat sheet of paper.
Right. And that flat sheet of paper, he calls it plane P. That's the plane of reality, the physical world where action happens.
And the tip of the cone itself?
That's point S, the summit. That represents your present. It's where your body is right now, interacting with the world.
So the tip is me acting in the now. It's the point of contact. What is the rest of the cone? The big, wide base floating up in the air.
That base, which he calls AB, represents the totality of your past. That is pure memory. It's just hanging there, motionless, containing everything you have ever experienced.
So memory isn't a drawer we open. It's this massive cloud just hanging over us, always sort of pressing down.
And it's dynamic. The cone is constantly moving. And this is where that telescope analogy from the source material is so helpful.
I like that one. It says remembering is like adjusting a telescope.
Exactly. When you try to remember something, let's say your first grade teacher's name.
Yeah.
You don't go search a file system. You mentally jump into the past, into that big cone. You start at the base, this Milky Way of general ideas and foggy images. That's the rotation. You're just pointing the telescope.
And then what happens?
Then you have contraction. You narrow the focus. You try to push those memories down the cone, making them tighter and tighter, until they can fit into the tip, the present moment. You have to turn the ghost of a memory into a physical action, like speaking her name out loud.
So the general idea forms when the motor habits of the body, like speech, rise up to meet those descending images of pure memory.
That is the intersection. The past pressing against the present. It's a really beautiful active process. It's not retrieving a file. It's synthesizing two different realities.
Okay, but this brings up a huge obvious problem, and the sources tackle it head on. If memories are not stored in the brain, if they're this spiritual cloud in a cone, why does getting hit on the head cause amnesia?
This is the strongest argument for the materialists, right? Lesions, brain damage, aphasia seems to prove the brain is the container. You break the container, the contents spill out.
It seems pretty clear cut. My grandmother had a stroke and she lost her ability to find words. It felt like parts of her library had just burned down.
Of course. But Bergson has a brilliant answer for this. And he uses the analogy of the coat and the nail.
The coat and the nail. Okay, lay it out for me.
Okay, so imagine a coat hanging on a nail on the wall. If I pull the nail out of the wall, what happens to the coat?
It falls on the ground.
Right. Does that mean the nail was the coat?
No, of course not. I was just holding it up.
Exactly. Or does it mean the coat ceased to exist just because it fell?
No, it's just in a useless heap on the floor. It's there, but you can't use it.
And Bergson argues the brain is the nail. It is the physical mechanism that allows the memory, the coat, to hang in the present, to be useful.
So when you have brain damage, you haven't destroyed the memory. You've just destroyed the mechanism that allows that memory to land in reality.
You've broken the circuit. The source material talks about aphasia, the inability to recall words. Bergson points out that so often the person knows exactly what they want to say. The memory's there, hovering, but they can't actualize it. They can't convert that virtual image into the motor movement of speech.
The text mentioned that sometimes an aphasic person can't say a word in conversation, but then if they start to sing a song, the word just comes out perfectly.
Which is fascinating. And think what that proves.
Yeah.
If the memory file for that word was deleted from the brain, they couldn't sing it. The data would be gone.
Oh, right.
The fact that they can sing it means the motor pathway for singing is intact, while the pathway for speaking is broken. The memory itself, the spirit, the coat, is untouched. It just can't get through the door of the present because the lock is jammed.
That is a mind-bending way to look at brain injuries. It's not erasure, it's just disconnection.
It creates a sensory-motor disequilibrium. The past can't insert itself into the present action. It's a very hopeful view in a way. The person is still whole. They just can't manifest it.
So let's bring this all back to 2026. The SageMind article is bringing this up for a reason. We're drowning in information. We have AIs that can remember everything.
But AI memory is just storage. It's the hard drive model perfected. Bergson reminds us that human memory is really about attention to life.
Right. There's this scale the sources mention, the balance between the dreamer and the man of action.
Exactly. Think about the cone again. If you live too much at the base up in the clouds of the past, you're a dreamer. You're just flooded with memories that aren't useful for now.
I think we all know people like that. They're so lost in nostalgia or just their own thoughts that they literally trip over the sidewalk.
Right. They're detached from reality. They might be poetic, but they're not effective. They have low attention to life.
And on the other end, if you live only at the very tip of the cone,
then you're the impulse man. You just react automatically to every single stimulus. You're like a rock rolling down a hill or a lower animal. You have no depth, no past guiding you.
I feel like in 2026, a lot of us are being pushed toward being the impulse man. We just react to notifications. Ding, look, buzz, click.
We are operating almost purely on habit memory. We're letting that switchboard run entirely on autopilot.
So true good sense, as Bergson calls it, is the tension between those two extremes.
It's the ability to keep one foot firmly in present action, but use the past to inform it. It's using the past only as it helps the present. The very pragmatic view of the spirit.
Which also explains why we forget. Like we said, forgetting isn't a failure.
It's a whole point. We're designed to forget so that we can act. Attention to life is the filter that decides what gets through that door.
Yeah. So where does this all leave us? We've unpacked that the body is a filter, not a bucket. The brain is a connector, not a hard drive. And memory is this spiritual reality that's always pressing against the door of the present.
I think it fundamentally changes how we view our own existence. We tend to think of the past as gone. It's over. Dead. We say, don't live in the past.
Yeah, Bergson says.
Bergson says the past is the most real thing there is. It's the foundation we're standing on. It's not gone. It's just right behind you.
It's accumulation. Yeah, like we're rolling snowballs of duration.
And that leads to the final, really provocative thought here. Bergson suggests that all of our past exists, all the time, right there, just unnoticed. We only see the tiny slice of it that is useful for our current action.
Which begs the question, if we stopped being so obsessed with utility, if we stopped for a moment being so obsessed with doing and acting, what is waiting there to flood back in?
That's the big question, isn't it? What vast forgotten realities are right behind your shoulder, just waiting for you to stop acting so they can enter consciousness? It suggests that in moments of deep rest, or maybe even at the moment of death when action ceases, that filter lifts and the whole self rushes back.
That is a haunting and kind of beautiful thought to end on. It suggests our limitations, our forgetting, are what make us functional humans, but they aren't the whole truth of who we are.
It definitely makes you look at your own day-to-day habits differently. It makes you value those moments where you stop doing and just let the cone expand a little bit.
Absolutely. So, this week, maybe try to notice the difference. When are you just playing a file, just using habit memory? And when are you actually time traveling? When are you the switchboard and when are you the operator?
It's a really good exercise.
Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll see you in the next one.
See you next time.